Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, October 4th, 2013, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals Corp., your gold and silver bullion dealer. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 800-649-6722. Our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. For anyone that wants to send in questions for the show, we can address them on air. Just send us an email, and we can take care of that. If anyone is interested in asking a question on air, the guest call-in number is 714-364-4707. And I'd like to apologize right away for the delay. We had some technical problems. The show, for some reason, didn't book our time slot, and we had to reschedule for 12:30. So it will be archived as usual, so you could go to our website. As many of you know, we have a new website now, and there's a menu at the top for the blog site, and you can click on that, and the show will be, as usual, on the blog site. Also, on the sliders that show up on the website, the Gold Radio Cafe slider, when you click on the Learn More, it goes directly to the updated show for the week. So you can listen to the show right from the new website. You just click on the slider for the Gold Radio Cafe image. Just to give you a few quotes here, we have gold is down about $1.40 at $13.13.30. Silver is at $21.62.5. And we have the Dow Jones is up $48 at $15,044. Crude oil is still over that $100 mark. It's at $103.56. It's up 25 cents for the day. And so we have a lot of movements in the markets now. As you know, there's a lot of interesting things happening in the U.S., the government shutdown and so on, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But what I'd like to do right away is I just take a minute to just talk about a document here I have for hyperinflationary events in history, and then we're going to bring in our co-host Jeff from Calgary. And it's we'll get into the what's going on in the United States, but this document is a history of hyperinflation, and the one in Yugoslavia reads like this: under Tito, Yugoslavia ran a budget deficit that was financed by printing money. This led to rates of inflation of 15 to 20% per year. After Tito, the Communist Party pursued progressively more irrational economic policies. These irrational policies and the breakup of Yugoslavia led to heavier reliance on printing or otherwise creating money to finance the operation of the government and the socialist economy. This created the worst hyperinflation in history up to this time. By the early 1990s, the government used up all of currency reserves and proceeded to loot the hard currency savings of private citizens. Hint, hint, bail-in. It did this by imposing more and more difficult restrictions on private citizens' access to their hard currency savings in government banks. Retirement accounts, anyone? Now, in October of 1993, the monetary authorities created a new currency unit. The new dinar was worth 1 million of the old dinars. In effect, the government simply removed 6 zeros from the paper money. This, of course, did not stop the inflation, and between October 1st of 1993 and January 24th of 1994, prices increased by 5 quadrillion percent. This is a 5 with 15 zeros after it. Now, Jeff, does that sound like...
Oh, my.
Well, it sounds prescient, Bosco. It actually sounds prescient.
But notice the similarities between what the Yugoslavian government did and what the American government is doing. It's like a textbook. They're following the same pattern. And this is just one example.
Oh, I know. Well, I think I need to address a bunch of this stuff, Bosco, and it's lovely that you bring this up because, yes, there's, as we, in keeping with our mantra, self-reliance and pay attention, is what they're telling you really what is the truth. I want to read something that that speaks to how governments will violate the very fabric of those people who vote them in, and I want to read this. It's a reiteration of something we spoke about in the last couple of years, but here it is. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. Largesse is goodies. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship. The average age of the world's greatest civilization has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence, from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage. So now, the Hungarian example that Bosco just expressed and explained, and the current scenario where the politicians are doing everything they can to make sure that they remain in power because they are looting from the public treasury. So now it brings us to the government shutdown. And this little quote, by the way, Bosco, was written in 1775, few brief moments before the United States of America was declared its independence from Britain, right? So there's an interesting scenario about this, and Churchill said this, and I'm sure he quoted some other very wise sage of the past, but that which you do not recognize and know of historic happenings, you are destined to fall into the same pitfalls. You are destined to create the same thing that you don't notice from the past. So now let's chat a little about the government shutdown. We've had some conversations from some of our viewers, or some of our listeners, I guess. It's kind of hard to view us, isn't it, Bosco?
Yeah, exactly.
About how and what the government shutdown is doing. Now, here again, let's play two sides of the coin. From information that I've been doing research on, Bosco, there's all this whining and crying about a shutdown. And from one perspective, it seems to be a total joke, right? There really is very little reason why this government shutdown cannot continue indefinitely, because almost everything is still running. Get a load of this. 63% of all federal workers are still working, and 85% of all government activities are still being funded during this shutdown. What does that tell you, Bosco? There's a reconciliation here. One group says one thing, and the next the other. And I think part of the plan here by the government is to elicit pain, the maximum amount of pain, in order for them to facilitate what they need, and that is increasing the debt ceiling so they can borrow to spend money, okay? In fact, this shutdown is such a non-event that even referring to it as a partial government shutdown would really be a bit of a misnomer, I think. Okay, here's a few facts. I mean, there's a list of 36 here, but here's a few facts about the government activities that are actually being funded. 1,350,000 essential federal workers are still working. Oh, okay, fair enough. 63% of the federal workforce will continue to work during this government shutdown. Postal service is up. Military is up. Senior or Social Security are receiving their benefits, although we know that can't go on forever. Medicare recipients get their benefits. Medicaid recipients get their benefits. Food stamps getting there. Unemployment will continue to get. Federal retirees get their pensions. The federal school lunch program has enough money for the end of the month. Federal Reserve will remain completely functional. This is a bit of a non issue and the nomenclature issue, because, as you know, Bosco, the Federal Reserve isn't federal and it isn't a government agency, but it's run on behalf of the government agency to enrich the government. Almost all law enforcement officials are going to continue to work. The Supreme Court's up. The TSA are going to continue to molest airport people. The air traffic controllers are out. The border patrol agencies are there. The visas and passports are going to, like, the list just goes on and on and on. So one of the things that happens in all of this, it's the federal government has created an environment where they have deemed themselves all essential to the running of the society. And here's where Bosco and I take great exception to it, because the nonsense involved in this is that federal agencies are not necessarily essential. We do need a government, absolutely, but we need a government that works for the people, not a population that works for the government, okay? And in the end, this shutdown from that perspective could be very good for the states, because they could see that they could get along without spending an enormous amount of money, and they could see that they could get along with furthering getting themselves in debt.
Yep.
And another, right, we have a government that's wildly out of control and needs to be reined in. Now, let's also put into perspective what the governments say, what presidents, incoming presidents, will say about the old presidency, and that is, all of your troubles are George Bush, which is what Obama said, which is not incorrect, because the next president that comes along is going to say, all of your problems are because of Obama. So get a load of this. During the Obama administration, the debt held by the public has risen by 90%, so almost double.
Wow.
And overall federal government spending has risen by three times, 317%.
Wow.
Since 1990. So, I mean, we always have, looking back, an assignment of blame. So there's interesting lessons in this, Bosco, and that is, the government is unfettered by its capacity to do stuff that just furthers its own agenda, and its agenda and the agenda of the people who voted it in are not the same.
Yep.
And so now I want to chat a little about the quote that I said from this was Alexander Tyler about democracy. And I also want to address the concept of, if you could get away with lying and stealing, and nobody, and you were guaranteed that you could get away with it, would you be more inclined to lie and steal and cheat? Well, interestingly, we are in a society where everybody thinks it's okay to lie and steal and cheat. And so what is happening, and what has happened with these, the notorious bankers, the banks that are too big to fail, is that they have pushed the envelope into that place where, well, we can manipulate the market a little, we can organize the market a little, and they're getting slapped on the hand with a Nerf bat and being fined $1 million or $1 billion even dollars, but they're continuing to play the hand of manipulating the markets. And so we get to this place where, if you could get away with stealing something, ladies and gentlemen, would you? Well, when you get to a point where the government's predisposition is, if we can get away with it, we're going to do it, we now start to do things like, as Bosco just explained, and as we were just witness to in Greece, well, let's go in and take people's savings. How do we do that? How do we coach that, Bosco? Well, let's say that the banks that are too big to fail have to be kept whole, so let's make sure they're kept whole, and let's put them in front of the pensioners. A bit egregious from our perspective, but from the government's perspective, if it needs to stay alive, it will go and take money and take funds from wherever it can. It will it will socialize the pension funds, which is where there was talk of the U.S. government going and taking or borrowing against pension funds.
Yep.
So now let me do a brief expose on trading statistics of gold. But a few short days ago, when we saw the price of gold fall down, and this again brings us back to the price of gold and the gold price. So here's a trade, Bosco, at 8 a.m., 120 December contracts were traded. At 8:01, 4,531 were shorted. At 8:30, 594 December contracts were traded. At 8:31, 8,175 contracts were shorted. At 10 o'clock, 284 contracts were long. At 10:01, 1,738 contracts were shorted. So this is buy, 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 sell. Buy, 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 sell. Buy, 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 sell. Okay. This, again, speaks to what Bosco and I have been talking about for months, and that is a blatant manipulation of the market and how everybody is turning a blind eye because they're saying we cannot let gold and silver run amok because then it will be indicative of the fact that we are out of control, our debt is outrageous, we're printing money into oblivion, and soon we're going to start to steal money from the population. This sounds like a broken record, doesn't it, Bosco?
Oh yeah, it's the same playbook. And you know, funny thing is, you know, you mentioned about getting away with it. You know, the Obama administration. You know, funny thing is, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, they had enough money to wage a war in Syria, but now they don't have enough money to keep the government workers and the federal government going. Well, where was the money going to come from to start the war in Syria then? You know,
Bosco, and you couldn't have made a better point, right? You couldn't have made a better point. And it's time for everybody to stand up and say, this is outrageous. This is absolutely outrageous and completely and utterly unacceptable.
Yeah.
You can't
You talked about the trading statistics there. And just so people know, when those statistics come out, 800,000, or you said 8,000 contracts, okay, that means 800,000 ounces of gold, okay? So for somebody, the way that the futures market is supposed to work, if a refiner or a mining company or, a government mint wants to hedge their risk, they would sell that gold into the market right away so they're not exposed to market fluctuations. That means those contracts should represent, 800,000 ounces of gold, which at current prices is roughly, hold on, I have to count my zeros here. That's 1 million. that's $1.08 billion, okay? I don't think there's too many people that have that much gold that they're going to be producing and hedging against in the short term. So, I mean, the numbers are just way out of whack, and it's obviously that, something's going on that isn't normal. But, again, you know, that's what those markets are designed. I guess that's how you trade in those markets, that, you know, people talk about manipulation, and it is manipulated. There's no question. But the unfortunate thing is that it does continue, and there's really nothing that they're doing about it. I think we discussed last week or the week before that they declared that there was no manipulation in the silver market, and the head of the CFTC said that their investigation is closed. Well, you know, it's political theater, and they're all, you know, there's a lot of connections and backdoor deals and so on that go on. So unfortunately, that's something we have to live with, and I don't think we can change it by doing what we're doing, unfortunately, but it has to be at a higher level. It has to be at a political level. Somebody, there needs to be changes to the laws and how these markets are structured.
I would like to counterbalance Bosco's position by sort of suggesting another one. And while I think Bosco's position is speaks a bit to resignation, we can't do anything of it. But what Bosco and I are doing, to the best of our ability, is to opening people's eyes so that they in fact can take exception. And we've even had one of our listeners recently has just shown us that he's been actually writing to the government to suggest that some of their activities in doing this nonsense is contrary to the best interests of Canadian citizens. And Bully for You, the listener will remember and know who he is. And we take exception to much that the government does. And we also suggest that we need a government, but we need a government that is accountable to its population. Yeah. And we don't want people to think that there's nothing they can do about it. But we do also want to suggest that what they can do about it is protect themselves, because we think the government and the powers that be do not have your best interests at heart. And it gives us great concern that that we would be in a position where we could tell people about what's going on and not do that. We would think that we would be acting outside of our realm of conscience, because we think in all good conscience you should be made aware of what's going on in the government. And I want to wander back to one, hyperinflation, but also give you a personal episode of this. Years ago, in the late 90s, I was called to Kuala Lumpur, to Malaysia, to do some work with a group. And when they, in the middle of all this, I don't know if you remember this, Bosco, but in the middle of all this, the Prime Minister took offense against the Treasury, the Minister of Finance. He took offense to him, so he went out in the press and accused him of buggery. Well, buggery is kind of an old term, but it has to do with something that is viewed very poorly in that part of the world. And because he was concerned that the Minister of Finance was undermining or underpinning his authority. So in the throes of all this, they had a great calamity politically, and their currency collapsed. And their currency collapsed to an enormous amount, not unlike Hungary, although I don't think it was hundreds of thousands of percent, but their currency fell by about 75 or 80%. And one of the things that happened during this conversation of me coming and providing some advice was that that I would like to be remunerated in U.S. dollars, but the government had issued a currency blockage so that no company could be sending money overseas. So the way they got around it is that they delivered money in cash to people. So it was a very interesting observation at any given point in time that they would when the government issues scenarios where they can't deal with their money and they can't export their money and they can't buy money outside, what happens is currency restrictions go into place. Yep. And this is not uncommon, and it's happened in many, many countries. And consequently, the whole facade of the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency of the planet is also right now in serious peril. The rest of the world is looking at this going, wow, if the U.S. actually does default on its debts, what happens with defaulted debt, Bosco? Well, we dealt with this in Argentina a little while ago. We dealt with this in various countries. Their debt, the face value of the paper, ladies and gentlemen, falls, and it falls sometimes quite dramatically. So $100 face value in Argentinian debt in the early 2000s was trading at $30. Mm-hmm. So you'd pay $30 to receive $100 at a given period of time later, plus a coupon. And that's how they make the interest rates change. Well, the U.S. treasuries and the U.S. paper, if everybody thinks the U.S. will default on their debt, the face value of that will trade lower by the traders. And that's a perilous place for the Americans to do and be. And so what the Americans do is they say, we will go in and buy that paper to make sure everybody's comfortable that it's good. So they're artificially supporting their own debt by buying the paper, by printing money to buy their paper. So that in and of itself is delusory, and it's also illusory. They're creating an illusion that their debt is safe by buying it with money that they create out of thin air. And that gets us to what the rest of the world stage talks about. So then we get to Mario Draghi saying, you know, the protracted U.S. government shutdown would threaten the global economy. Who's kidding who, Bosco? The global economy is in the tank right now, and it's delusory for anybody to think it. But they're now talking heads saying, here's what's up. Here's what's going on. We think this is bad. And in fact, who's the head of the IMF? What's her name? Christine Lagarde.
Christine Lagarde.
Yeah. So she's the head of the IMF. She's saying the same thing. She's wandering around going, oh my heavens, things are bad. We need to be conscientious about this and not spend. Of course, they're saying the right things. But they all know that they cannot. The U.S. government will not default on its debt. Covertly, They will they've already defaulted on their debt covertly. The Americans won't say they're going to default, but we all know they will. But the Americans are also manipulating the marketplace in such a manner that makes everybody think that they won't. So again, it's just this great shell game, really, isn't it?
I'm
curious as to how long it can happen.
Well, I mean,
and
even
this guy, 1700s, was telling us it took 200 years. Guess what? We're at the end of the Americans' 200 years.
Yeah. No, I mean, even Warren Buffett was out. I read a piece today. He's saying that they won't default, but you know, they're not going to, like you said, they're not going to officially default. But they're in a sense going to add more zeros to their dollar, just like they did in former Yugoslavia. And folks, what that means is, you know, maybe practically they won't actually do that, but when you add zeros to a currency, it doesn't mean that you have more money. All it means is that cup of coffee that cost a dollar now costs $10, okay? And what happens is that your salary doesn't change. So your $1 of money earned isn't going to buy you that cup of coffee anymore. You're going to have to earn $10. So instead of working for, let's say, $1 an hour, you're going to have to buy a cup of coffee. You're going to have to work 10 hours to earn $10 to buy that cup of coffee that is now 10 of the new currency unit. It's basically, it's just manipulating of the currency. And in America, what they're doing is they're adding to their debt. The numbers are just going through the roof. I mean, you know, they have over $16 trillion of debt, which is,
almost 17.
Obviously, they're never going to pay that off. It's impossible. So what they're going to
Let's do the grade five math, Bosco, as we've done before, but let's just reiterate it. The U.S. government generates from its taxes and its revenues, they generate $2.5 trillion a year,
mm-hmm.
and they spend $3.5 trillion,
yeah.
and they have, officially, they have $17 trillion of debt. So somebody in grade five could figure this out. Okay, we spend $1 trillion more a year than we generate, and we have $17 trillion of official debt, and some would suggest the unofficial, which would be unfunded liabilities. They don't have any money put aside for them, but in fact they are going to need to pay them. Unfunded liabilities run between $120 and $200 trillion. So I don't know, Bosco, what's the number on that? You're $1 trillion in debt every year, and you owe $217 trillion in total. That means it's going to take you, it'll take you infinite number of time to ever pay off your debt because you're going in debt every year. And here's where things just break down. So, and that is good old, our good old Scottish quote from 1772 talks about democracies are not consistent because they go to see how the voters will vote for whoever they can get in. And the other interesting thing on this, Bosco, is the optics on who gets in and how voters get in. If everybody voted and everybody conscientiously created a scenario where people who got in would take good care of the economy, elections would be less predictable and manipulation of the election results would be more difficult. But what does happen is 10% of the people show up because they play this sheeple. They play this sheeple hand. They all just say, don't fight City Hall. You can't. It's just silly because whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Well, that in and of itself is an action of letting the powers that be organize who gets voted in. And so we have, if enough people, and it doesn't have to be a majority even, but if enough people say, you know, fooey to this is unreasonable, this is unacceptable. We will not let you spend our money and act in a manner that is outside of our best interests in order to facilitate your own. If we demand that this greedy, selfish nonsense that carries on comes to a stop, if enough people do that, and it doesn't have to be a majority, they actually have to pay attention to it. They can't ignore it. But what they're hoping to do is pretend and make people ignore it and make people defer to their wishes. And if enough people wake up to it, which is what Bosco and I hope and trust that we are a modicum of sound mind and insight, that they'll just stop doing it. I don't know, Bosco, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, we're just a small little radio program here. It started on a shoestring. And, you know, but hopefully, you know, some people are listening. And, you know, if we could, you know, just like you say, wake some people up and, you know, get people to kind of think in a different way and realize that, you know, that the, unfortunately, the establishment is not working for you. They're working against you. And I think there was a time when the people actually did, you know, run the government, where how it's supposed to be. You know, we vote people, politicians into office to serve our needs and to serve the needs of the community and the nation. Now it seems like it's backwards, that they're dictating to us what our needs are and what they should be doing as a nation, where, you know, a republic and a democracy is not supposed to work like that. So, you know, we have, but, you know, we always talk about history and people, you know, you have to realize that this is nothing new. It's happened, like I said, at the beginning of the program, what happened in the mid-90s in Yugoslavia, happened in the, also in the 90s in Argentina, in the Roman Empire. Here there's one of the hyperinflationary speculative
bubble. Oh, in France, in Germany, many countries, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's, I mean, folks, you, if you just go through and read some of these experiences, you realize, and you look at what's going on in America, there's so many similarities. The big difference is that, you know, this is the first time in history where we have one nation's currency as the world's reserve currency, and every nation, every central bank and nation around the world is using that currency as a reserve. So when that currency experiences hyperinflationary, it's going to be a chain reaction to everyone. Everyone holding that currency is going to lose value. So, I mean, the currency units and how they are used in society is, it's kind of weird how it functions, but, you know, ultimately what's going to happen to the man on the street is that our standard of living is going to decline. And, you know, our freedoms are going to be infringed upon, and we're going to turn into a nation like Yugoslavia that's right now still a complete disaster, okay? And socialism or communism or whatever is going to be running the state, and that's what we don't want. That's the whole purpose of why, you know, Canada and America was created. We wanted to, you know, escape the tyranny that was going on in Europe at that time, and, you know, build a nation of free thinking and free people. And, you know, this was what America was at one time, I believe, Canada as well. But things are changing now, and the politicians seem to have taken control of the nation, where it should be the people are in control and the politicians work for us. So, folks, I mean, you know, we are in the gold and silver business, you know, and ultimately, you know, we don't want the gold and silver to hit these highs that, you know, are discussed in the gold community. We hear numbers from 5,000 to 20,000. It's not socially, it's not a good picture, but it seems to me that the people in control, you know, want that to happen. That's the direction they're going in. And, you know, in order for you to protect your assets, we feel that it's a very good idea that you have a good portion of your assets allocated to physical gold and silver, because throughout history, in times like these, it's always been a store of value, and people were able to, you know, to maintain their standard of living, and in many cases became very wealthy. So that's what you want to do. We only have about 10 minutes left. Jeff, did you have any other questions or topics you wanted to discuss there?
Yes, absolutely. We have. I want to put a couple of things in perspective relative to what we historically know, and I want to chat a little about more more a metaphor than an actuality. But we talk about the Weimar Republic in Germany after the First World War, how it collapsed and the currency collapsed. But one of the things that Bosco just made mention of, ladies and gentlemen, was the context of various countries doing various things fiscally. And historically, various countries would go up the stump. The democracy would go up the stump, and it would turn into a dictatorship of some sort. And, well, one of the things that's transpired over the last little bit is the world has become a much smaller place. And the very premise that the world is becoming smaller makes us way more susceptible to the vagaries of the marketplace itself. So even though Iceland was very little, when this the 2008 calamity came and the people who ruled the banks in Iceland said, okay, we're just going to shut the banks down. We will declare bankruptcy. This had an effect of this is what actually needs to happen in a reasonably run capitalistic system where you are not too big to fail. You are allowed to fail and you don't go back to the taxpayers and the government to print money to get you out of the pickle that you developed yourself into. And certainly when a country went up the stump, if you will, when Argentina's economy went up the stump, Argentina's economy was less important to the global economy than the U.S. economy is to the global economy. And what happens is the Americans, the Europeans, the Chinese, and the Russians are now so intermingled and interdependent on one another that when they choose to do anything economically, it has a rippling effect that touches every aspect of the globe. Now, remember, Bosco, last week we talked about that article that was written, this research article that was written that one of our listeners turned us on to, about how interdependent most of the financial institutions are to the control of profits, revenue, and direction of various companies on the planet, and how this control gets more and more and more, it gets more centralized and more less democratic. So now you have fewer and fewer people defining and deciding where all of this is happening. So one of the things that happens, ladies and gentlemen, is as small folk, if you will, just as we've seen in Asia and elsewhere other than North America, because I think the wool has been pulled over the North Americans' eyes, Bosco, so diligently that they think that they're being told what to do and think, and that's part of one of the reasons Bosco and I do this, is in Asia, everybody knows that gold can help. Gold can preserve their wealth. Gold is a safety, and it has been a safety net for the millennium. And so when you start to see the currencies collapse, the currency wars going, what I think they may end up doing, Bosco, as we've talked about before, they may just say one currency for the whole globe. And it'll be backed by, gold and silver. And consequently, if you don't have any gold and silver, we are going to confiscate all of your wealth. And now you become imprisoned, if you will, or you become slaves to the new world order. Which, again, I mean, it's certainly not something that good old George Orwell didn't think about. And we now have this place where this is a possibility. Is it a reality? No, not yet. But is it heading there? Yes, it is. And are there few people making these decisions? There indeed are. And there are those of us who choose to become independent of the system and use the system for our just our general functioning, but do not get used by the system. So be in the world, but not of the world. Let's be in a place where we do not allow our good conscience to allow ourselves to be used by the system. And that's something that we want to forever propagate, right, Bosco? We don't want people to listen to these things and not act. Because listening and knowing what's happening and not taking any action is absolutely ridiculous behavior.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything done if you don't act. So, I mean, and you see, talking about action, you see currently the BRIC nations are actively now pursuing a alternative so-called SWIFT system of transferring money outside of the current money transfer system that's used by the establishment banks, where they're building a I guess, the communication network where Russia and China and Brazil can wire funds without going to these established banks. The SWIFT system is really, you know, it's how money is wired from country to country and so on. And you know, people know what it is because anytime you go to a bank and you want to wire funds, you have to have a SWIFT number. All it is it's a computer program that links all the banks and they all get a special code and, you know, money is transferred from account to account. And the U.S. tried to use this as a, I guess, a political
monopoly
they do have, but they tried to somehow enforce it as a bargaining chip with Iran when they said they were going to kick them out of the SWIFT system. Well, Iran said, well, I guess good for you. We don't need your SWIFT system. We're going to, you know, create our own. And China and Russia and these BRIC nations are doing that. And I think, you know, what's happening is just these international banks that are they see what's going on. I mean, come on, people. These people that are in the higher up, they know each other. They know what's really going on. And they're positioning themselves on the chessboard to protect themselves from what's happening and taking alternative measures to keep functioning as a nation. And they see that the U.S. is a basket case. And, I mean, come on, we can't keep printing money. There's history dictates what happens when you do that. So unless some drastic measures are done in the U.S., I mean, I see no other direction that it's going except for high inflation and higher gold and silver prices, higher food prices, social unrest, and so on. But, you know, these nations are creating an alternative way to manage their finances. And I think, you know, the average citizen should do the same. I know we can't create an alternative network, but you can protect yourself. And one of the best ways to do that is with gold and silver or other tangible assets. Again, you know, I like to always tell people, do your own research. You don't have to listen to me and Jeff, but, you know, we're there for, as Jeff always says, food for thought and to be self-reliant and, you know, figure it out for yourself. You know, study on your own, look at history, and, you know, hopefully you'll come to the similar conclusion that we're trying to come across explaining. So I think that's about all we have for today. Again, folks, I apologize for the delay, and we don't have any questions. Let me just check the email here. Yeah, we don't have any questions right now. So, Jeff, I guess we'll close out the program, and thank you again for joining us today. And, folks, have a good weekend, and all the best.
All right, Bosco, thank you very much. And again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing us to be of service to you and turning on the lights. And look forward to chatting with you again next week.
All right, goodbye.
All righty.